Robin Ayu from the Localization Fireside Chat. Happy Friday, everybody. Today we are recording episode 172, if memory serves me correctly. And today it's snowing here in Toronto. Another snow, I guess. This morning I woke up to the weather report telling us there's a major lake just here behind us, just an hour or two drive away from us. 65% of the lake has been frozen now. It's unusual. Normally about 30% of the lake freezes in the winter. Now it's a massive lake. It's half of the size of the Mediterranean, if I get my dimensions correctly. It's a pretty large lake. And snow continues in the north here, but my guest is in the south and she's enjoying the warm weather of Florida. And I have the distinct pleasure and honor to have with me Diana Fritz. And today we're going to get to know Diana's story. And I was going through some research about you, Diana, and it's pretty interesting. I can't wait for the audience and myself to get to know you a little bit better, get to know what you do. And before we dive into it, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Robin. I appreciate the honor to be a guest with you.
I really appreciate it too. Thanks for taking the time. For those who don't know you, and everybody on this channel gets the first question, the story question. What is your story?
Well, you know, that's a great question. And so if you can't like see me visually and you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts, I think it's just important to address that a part of my story is I have a unique appearance about me. I am a 12-year cancer thriver and was diagnosed with a rare form of cancer near my left eye 12 years ago. And for 9 years, we were able to save the eye with surgeries and different procedures like that. And then in April of 2023, got the tough call. Diana, the cancer is moving behind your eye towards your brain. So we've been fighting for your eye. Now we shift to fight for your life. And so now I have this unique look with a skin patch from my leg covering up where my left eye was. But I have worked to seize that as an opportunity for the majority of my life. I have learned the importance of faith, the importance of serving and adding value to others. And this just gives me a different lens to do that. My adversity is a unique way for me to connect and add value to other people. And that's my positive spin, right, on the unique look I have and the opportunity that I have in life today.
No, I appreciate it, Diana. Several of our guests have been on this channel talking about adversity and how we all face it in different forms. We all face it in different ways. We've all been served a dish of adversity at some point in our life in different manners. I've told my story before on a recent podcast. Personally, I'm a Civil War survivor from Lebanon originally, where I learned early in the age how to survive and how to make sure you fend for your life, literally, not figuratively. And then, you know, life progresses from there and, you know, and move on from there. We all faced different elephants in the room at some point, and we had to deal with those ghosts and monsters. But we preserve, you know, we move from that. We develop as a human being. We're very resilient. That's our nature. We don't give up easy as a human being. We always have that shed of hope in all of us that wants to fight on, that wants to survive. And I see that in you this morning. And thank you again for joining me. I really appreciate it. You've been set out to help people in leadership in a variety of places, not just in leadership. You know, your story is quite amazing how you're set out to help others, not necessarily in technology, but more in helping them see what you see under pressure. And you've seen a shared amount of pressure. Now, the first, you know, from the audience perspective, they're looking at, you know, who works for, like, our audience is formed of individual who works for companies, individuals, entrepreneurs and CEOs and founders, etc. So they'd probably be looking at, well, maybe a better leadership systems, better tools, maybe try to create some resiliency for themselves to see themselves moving forward and engaging in a better system going along there. Why don't we take a look at what's going on today from a leadership perspective, from your opinion, and what can leaders today learn from what you've learned, and how do you instill some of the lessons in them?
That's a loaded question. I think I'll touch base on a few key points. I feel like first, the dynamic of change within businesses today and within just youth, children across the world, right? Change is at a quicker pace than what it has been, let's say 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago. And that is a reality. I think as a leader, it's often hard to remember that we're often the ones driving the change, or we know about the change months before our people do. But we often forget that when we communicate to them or we're prepping them for the change, we forget the transition we went through. And then we miss those opportunities to connect with them and understand what it's going to be like for them, right? And help them to see the why for the change and why it's happening, what the win can be for them, and how they can participate. So that's one thing I just feel like is really important, is that leaders are conscious mm-hmm. of change and the impact. Change is the reality, but how we communicate it and how we present it to our organization can make a huge difference in our level of respect as a leader, as well as them trusting the organization. A second piece, as you mentioned, like systems for an organization. I walk into many companies that have great core values on the wall and a mission and a vision, but they're not necessarily lived out. They're not practiced throughout the organization. Leaders aren't leading them. Leaders aren't reinforcing them. And so that is often a great framework as the basis for a foundation to help the people mm-hmm. be ready for change, because the core values are real and they know what to expect in regards to communication or to change, because it's lived out and it's communicated and it's presented in a consistent way. And then the third part, once you have those values and mission and vision and it's really lived out, is what's the process? Like, how do we run our meetings? How do we run our business? And making those consistent and clear across the organization really help to have that framework that people know what they can count on. Because in a world of change, to know what you can count on and expect is really key for people.
100% agree with you. Now, it's just an observation on my side, just on this channel, 2.5 years old. I don't know how many podcasts, I can't count, but many of them, podcast guests came in to talk about leadership. Do you think we have a leadership issue?
Cool. You know, I'm spending a large portion of my time right now with the younger generation. And I would say they perceive we have a leadership issue. They don't see, at least within the U.S., they are leaders from a state, local, political level. They don't really see consistent leadership, transparent leadership. They see attacks versus figuring out what we have in common, right? So I would say, yes, we have some opportunity with the leadership that we are presenting to our younger generation, and they are our next set of leaders. So we have a gap right now.
So the reason I asked the question is because if we have so many ideas from the outside looking in at those organizations, being experts such as yourself and many others, we must see an opportunity in improving leadership styles. Not necessarily, I don't get involved on the government side, but on the enterprise side. A manager doesn't become a manager. We had somebody on the podcast is telling me that managers sometimes become managers because of accidents, you know.
Yeah.
Get promoted. They don't have the right talents or skills, but you got the tenors, you've got the seniority. Time for you to become a leader now. And knock, knock, here I am. I'm a leader. Now, what do I do? Like, a lot of people don't know what to do, right? And so it becomes, and that's that evolution in the career path, Diana, gets us to a place where now we've got leader at the top who accidentally been promoted all the way to the top. We still have the same issues. Yes. They're not supposed to be a leader.
They're not. They haven't been prepared on what it means to be a leader. And I run into that frequently in scenarios where people are promoted because they've been there for a long time, but they may not even want to be a leader, right? They may be a great single contributor, and that's where their best fit is. And they're promoted, and then they're not necessarily trained on what that means. Like, it is a very different role to lead people than it is to do a focused solo job. They're all
right. Now, in your opinion, for today's organizations, for instance, what feels most fragile right now? Like, what is it in terms of leadership for an organization? Have you thought of that? What is the most vulnerable area in an organization right now?
I'm going to answer that from my lens, right, in terms of the organizations I'm involved with. But it probably pervades most organizations. Communication, or the lack of it, is often one of the most vulnerable or critical areas within an organization. And I say that I watch when organizations, they don't communicate what's happening, and they find out their rumblings, right? John Gordon has a great quote when there's a gap in communication, negativity fills the gap. And thus, right, we don't communicate, negativity fills the gap. We start to see people leaving because they don't know, right? And that pervades the majority, a lot of organizations. And I don't know why, but that's an area I have a lot of passion on in terms of communication, because if we want change or growth or a downtime, all of those things to go better, communication needs to be at a very high bar.
So I don't know why, but that piece, communication, frustrates me. Why is that? I'll tell you why. Because I think, you know, it doesn't require a lot of investment. It's communication. There's not, you're not buying new systems. You're not buying buildings. You're not hiring people. The people are already there. And it seems to me that this is the first element in any company that it's been focused on the most, communication. And it's the easiest one to fix. And I don't understand that.
You know, from my perspective, it does take time, right? And I think, but it's not a lot of time once you make it a part of your rigor. I can recall years ago being a part of an executive team at DME Automotive. And we just had this rigor in our team meetings that we finished the executive team meeting. What do we need to communicate? What's our common messaging? And who's going to do it, right? Is it a massive communication that's coming out from me? That was the role I was in. Or is it something that you're going to communicate individually on our teams? And then by when, right, is it going to be communicated? Because if you want your organization to work as a team and to work in unity, you have to have a little rigor around it. And then once you get that habit in place, it doesn't really take that much time because we know who's doing what, whose role it is.
You know, each individual out there has got his own leadership styles, right? So, I mean, it becomes an individual thing, right? Although, you know, from an organization, shareholders, et cetera, they can agree on how you want to run the company, but it doesn't matter at the end of the day, human, unless we move to an era where bots are running companies, but at this point, human are running companies. Yeah. And each individual has his own, you know, either style or maybe cycles, career cycles that they go through. And sometimes people repeat things unconsciously, right? So they, how many times I've heard of this individual work for 20 companies before he got to his position, got hired as a CEO in a new company. And I don't know, maybe there are some patterns in there because 20 companies that you, I'm just exaggerating, but maybe 5-10 companies you worked for before, I don't care. Those patterns has been now established, and most likely those patterns will be repeated here. Mm-hmm. So there are some cues that people can pick up on when the board is looking for a CEO, for instance, or the board is looking for a leader in any capacity in any company, right? Mm-hmm. But these things tend to manifest itself over and over again. So doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results, I don't think this is beneficial to anybody. Have you tried in that level of work? You know, I know you manage a consulting firm. Do you get involved in that? Grit, does it get involved in that? That's the name of your company, Grit,
in the
Grace, Resilience, Influence, and Trust.
Yeah. That's the name of the company, yes. In the communication aspects or helping a company with communication and planning. I do, and sometimes it's not a direct involvement, like I'm engaged just for that. At times it's, you know, Diana, there's things aren't working, right? So can you come in and just help? And I like to help just by observing a few leadership meetings just to see what I observe and then connect with the CEO on my observations and if there's, you know, some ideas for assistance. Another thing I find really helpful is a format of like a leadership or a communication roundtable where it's a part of the John Maxwell Foundation resources, but you're around the table and in a game-like format, you are responding to questions that touch on leadership, communication, culture, and people do it a little more openly when it's kind of like a game, but that gives you insight into what they're really feeling that maybe they're not saying, but it's just an easier forum to share where you're at. And then that gives me and, you know, whoever I'm partnering with, CEO or president, a plan of what we can work on together to improve the organization.
So in your opinion, based on your experience, Diana, is there patterns that keep repeating regardless of industries?
I mean, in terms of communication specifically, I think, yeah, there definitely is. I mean, I've been a part of multiple organizations and that's often where the gap is in how we communicate and share things. We surprise people. And we don't need to. And when we surprise them, that leads to some negativity. or just decrease in their productivity and their loyalty to an organization.
In your opinion, Diana, it's interesting because I keep hearing this statement quite often, management is authority, but meanwhile, more it's a self-management thing. So what's your thoughts on authority versus self-management?
You know, I personally don't like to look at management as authority. To me, it's an opportunity I have to serve an organization and to be a part of the team. And my preference is to be partnering with the team first. I really don't like to be in the position where I'm a dictator, right? And doing authority. I want to be in the position where we're collaborating together. Eventually, decisions need to be made, but there's a way to do it where people do not feel like they're kind of dictated to, or somebody with a title is just telling them what to do, right? You want the team to be rallying with you for the mission, not feeling like they're, that they don't have insight and they don't have value to add to where the company is headed.
And are you talking about influence at this stage?
Yes, that's a great way to tie that in.
So do leaders in general, do they understand influence or they just default to authority? I'm the boss.
I think it really depends. I think leaders that really want to be a leader, right? Because they care about people, they see their role in terms of influencing the organization and they're not just chasing a title. They are, that influence does matter to them and they do things to spend time with people at all levels in the organization to try to build that influence and that trust. And then you have those that are just chasing the title and it's about them, right? They want to climb a ladder of success. It's not, the influence isn't as meaningful to them, right? It's about the title. And that certainly impacts the organization and the loyalty that people have.
Now, you personally have lived through serious personal adversity. We were just talking about it earlier.
Yeah.
What actually changed in how you lead?
I think it put my, what I would say, right, in terms of always being authentic and transparent, it put that to the test at a whole different level. So when I was first diagnosed with cancer 12 years ago, I needed to spend, I probably stepped away from work for about 4 weeks because I knew I had to have multiple surgeries. And at first I was hesitant to share the why. And then I remembered, okay, Diana, you have extreme value from extreme trust to the leaders that you've worked for that are transparent and real about what they're navigating through, whether it's personal as much as reasonable, right, or professional. And they also share when they mess up, right? They're transparent about, okay, I messed up. This is what we need to do differently. And so that's been impactful to me, not to use it as, I don't ever want to complain about the situation I'm in or that I have cancer. I don't ever want to be a victim to cancer. But it has been an opportunity to just be transparent with people around what I'm navigating through at a high level and then allow them the opportunity to ask questions. Because when you can be more transparent about what you're going through and how you're going through it, and people see you smiling and people see you still positive and you're open to talk about it, then you can help them. Or maybe you can help a friend of theirs. If you're stoic and not willing to share and be authentic, you may miss an opportunity to add value to your people and to build additional trust with them.
You know, this is, I think Deb mentioned that in the past podcast. She's such a resilient woman. Where she is right now and what she's doing. It's absolutely wonderful, similar to what your story is. And it's good to be talking about this, you know, given I'm so happy that this podcast allows for a platform for people to share these stories. You know, these are the heroes of our modern day lives. You know, I know there's heroes are your policemen and your firefighters and your service people. Like those are top of the line, I would say, but there are unsung heroes that every day that goes to corporate America or corporate North America, in this case, I'm located in Canada. I got to include that they pick up and they go in and they do the work and regardless of what's going on around them. And that's a testament to how resilient these individuals are. So happy that you're here and your story with the audience. It's such a significant story for, you know, these people that they are probably complaining about, you know, their boss didn't get them the latest coffee makers or something. We have bigger issues in life to fight.
Yeah, no, that's great. And that's a great example and great perspective. I'll have many people come up to me and go, okay, Diana, I wanted to complain today because it was too cold outside or whatever happened. And then I think about you And I go, I really don't have anything to complain about. And I was like, well, I'm glad I can help you.
That's right. That's right. So how do you, you know, I mean, for those out there who are probably going through what you're going through, how do you share a lived experience without turning it into a brand or a crutch? How do you, you're continuing your life as normal.
Yeah.
You just said it earlier. You don't talk about a lot about what happened. Obviously, it is obvious, but how do you, beyond all that, how do you move on from that and just focus on what you need to do? There must be some mental exercise you had to go through because it's tough.
Well, you know, because cancer has impacted my appearance, right? I often need to address the elephant in the room in terms of, okay, why does Diana look the way she looks? And I really work to do that in a lighthearted form of humor, to just break the ice with people and let them know that it's okay, right? I'm okay if you ask me questions. It's fine. You may ask me questions I've never thought about myself, and I'm good with questions. But that's really my approach, is I always want to find a creative way when I'm walking into a new client potentially, or spending time with teams on a workshop or a topic, to be okay to joke about, okay, you're on my left, right? You're in my blind spot. I might run into you. Just to help them know it's okay, right? I am okay with where I'm at in life and my look. And it's okay to be real and to have fun with it.
That's right. Absolutely. And, you know, that leads us to more conversations around the bottleneck that we talked about. We started the conversation around how do we solve some of those problems in the corporate world, which is communication, obviously. And we talked about communication breakdown, but like everything else, right? In any corporation, it starts from the top, right? I'm assuming you have to set the agenda, you have to set the tone, you have to set the style right from the top. In your opinion, where do communication breakdowns show up most often in a leadership team?
You know, in the leadership team specifically, I think it's interesting how many times leaders walk out of a room without the conflict or differing opinions being addressed. And then that filters, right? Things don't move forward because if the leaders aren't willing to address like where there's conflict or differences of opinion together at their level, it's going to impact the rest of the organization. And that has been some great books written by Patrick Lencioni around dysfunctions of a team or the advantage that address things like that. And that's been a very impactful thing to work through on executive teams I've been a part personally, or ones that I'm helping coach, is to identify how to spark some conflict, to make conflict be okay, and how we address the conflict. So that way we may not agree on the final decision, but we're unified on the final decision. And we all have our talking points of how we walk out and communicate what the final decision is. And we're always loyal to the team. That is like one of the areas that I feel like it's avoided the most, but it can become the greatest opportunity to provide better communication to the team and better unity among an executive team. If the executive team can't be unified, you really can't expect the rest of the team to be.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what, and, you know, it depends on the company, depends on, I guess, what their business models are, et cetera. A professional service organization is different than a manufacturing company, obviously. Yeah. So have you noticed any difference in the how you manage or how people manage in a remote distributed work environment? Most people right now, like myself, working remotely, we don't go hardly to an office. If we do, it's case by case basis. But most people like in the professional services who do not need to go to an office per se, manufacturing or service, serving the public in a government capacity, whatever the case may be, but you have the freedom to work from home. I don't know if this added a layer of complexity or made us less communicative or more, we should exercise a little bit or change the communication style. What do you think about management style when it comes to remote working?
You know, during COVID, we all probably spent some time, whether we were in person and then all of a sudden we were shifting to working virtually. And at the time of COVID, I was working with an organization that was mainly virtual. So they already had that cadence of, we still did morning huddles. They were just virtual instead of everybody standing around, you know, the water or the coffee area. And there was still ways to connect with people, and you required, right? Video is not an option. we're going to look at each other, and just setting those cadences in place. Because many times, some companies, right, that went from in-person to virtual didn't put those standards in place. We're still going to interact by video. We're still going to do our team huddle in the morning. We're all going to participate. We're all going to share and let people kind of sometimes feel alone or sometimes hiding, right, and not being as productive. But you don't have to change your standards. They just look different. You start to use Teams or Zoom and show things on video. And that was really helpful in the organizations that I've been a part of. Now I'm in a scenario where I'm going to an office most days, and that's perfectly fine. Well trained now. I am not going to get on a virtual call without having my camera on.
Yeah.
And because that makes such a huge difference. I can remember when I first started to be in that work environment, at first I was a little uncomfortable going, okay, I don't want to have my camera on. But otherwise, you miss the whole dynamic of people connecting and teams when you're not looking at each other eye to eye.
So what do you think of people who just say, I'm shy behind the camera, I don't want to turn my camera on? And I've had a few of those. You know, I used to have, when I worked in the corporate world, I left a few months ago now. I used to get like into meetings and, you know, they are the usual people that they would put their camera on, but they are the people who just never put their camera on. And, you know, when you quiz them on that, it's not because they don't want to, just they don't feel like it. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know what the scenario is there. But, and from a leader perspective, I've had these conversations before we even went to work remotely post-COVID or during post-COVID. Leaders had the idea in their mind, if you go work from home, and I've talked to a few of them, and you guys, if you're listening to this podcast, you know who you are, where they tell me, oh, I'm not going to let anybody go work from home because I don't know if they're working. I think they're golfing all day. They had a trust issue.
Yeah.
And then COVID came and then everybody was forced to work remotely and all of a sudden trust is not a problem anymore. And, you know, give people cameras, turn the camera on. At least I'm listening to people's voices. Even if they don't turn their camera on, you still have some sort of a mechanism to connect with them. But we had to change, you know, like I was just going back to the initial idea of pressure sometimes or change in dynamics or situation forces us to do things and accept things that before that event, we probably wouldn't have accepted it. Who would have thought a bank will let all their employees go work remotely and all their staff will be joining on cameras? That was unheard of.
Yes, yes.
So on, you know, I'd just like to take your take on the people that they don't want to turn their camera on and they still till today don't want to turn their camera on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand it.
Yeah. No, I think, I mean, I watch different scenarios. I mean, in consulting, you may have a team, you're doing a training and people don't want to turn their cameras on. My inclination there is they're not paying attention. And then when it's ready for the software to
That's right. out, start gonna, developing ideas.
Yeah, they're not going to have any idea because they're really not paying attention. So in those scenarios, we work with our partner at the respective company. So we really need cameras on. We're going to ask people to rotate and take turns like demoing or participating. Mm-hmm. And we need cameras on at a minimum. When it's their turn to talk, the camera's got to be on. And if you have a routine piece within your organization where somebody's just not willing, I would schedule time one-on-one with them and just say, help me understand, is something not working? Do you not know how to do the technology? How can I help you get comfortable? Because this is important to everybody working together that we can see each other.
Yeah. Now, I sidetracked there, but what is the earliest signals that you detect that the team is drifting before performance drops? Like sometimes you get those signals before you actually performance just goes south.
Mm-hmm.
Do you observe those or can you talk to that?
I mean, my gauge is that often pops up in different forms of excuses, right? Or lack of accountability, not meeting deadlines or not responding, not being proactive with how they communicate or when they need help. Like those are, when those things are happening or not happening, those are often some advances. Okay, something's not right, right? They're either going to leave, they're having a personal issue, but just watching the dynamics of when somebody's shifting and changing from being responsive to not being responsive, from communicating to not, those are triggers that you've got to connect and figure out what's going on.
You know, a lot of people listening to this, they're shaking their head probably just thinking, yeah, I've seen that happen. And it happens all the time, more than what we want to know. And at different levels, like I'm not talking about like, you know, a CEO level, but could be a department manager in charge of 10 employees. And that's happening to you now. You don't need to be managing companies to detect that. You can detect it at a micro or mini teams at a lower level in the organization and company. Now, let's talk a little bit about DISC. And for the audience, that's dominance, influence, steadiness, and consciousness. I had to look this up because I didn't know what DISC was. I thought we were talking about, like, you know, the old days Blu-ray discs. But here, we don't do Blu-ray anymore. Okay. Tell me a little bit about DISC and how do you, for most people who don't know what DISC is, at least maybe you can explain it to us. And people don't miss it. So how do they... How do they get it right? Sorry.
No, that's fine. I was introduced to DISC probably 20 years ago. And in that format, when I was newer and introduced to it, I was like, it was presented more as like a personality style. And now I look at it as a combination of personality and communication. And you start with an assessment, which asks some, you know, those questions that you're just take, answer the question, right? And then it gives you a report. I use the Maxwell leadership version of DISC, which ties in some of John Maxwell's teaching as well into the output. But without doing an assessment like DISC, we all have blind spots in our communication. I've got a literal one, so that's my reminder. But we all have blind spots in our communication. One of them is often we assume that everybody communicates just like we do, and everybody receives communication just like we do. And that's just not reality. And particularly when you look at like the D, the more dominant personality, that often can be somebody that's in a CEO role. They're quick, make decisions, talk quickly. They don't really spend time like engaging and getting to know people, not natural to them. So their blind spot is often people are not seeing them as caring about the whole team, wanting to listen to people because they're just quick and paced and moving. And so when you take the time to do the assessment with, for example, like a leadership team, we walked through the DISC assessment together and it was really impactful to them because it helped the CEO to go, okay, there's only one other person on my team that is similar to me in a D profile. So I need to shift when I'm doing one-on-ones with them or talking with them to be conscious to my quick, fast-paced style is probably offending them. I need to spend a little more time to talk and ask questions or allow them to ask questions. And so I look at it as this analogy came to me the other day as I was going through Tim Elmore's book on habitudes. A lot of times we are determining, are we playing chess or checkers? So you use the same board to play chess or checkers. Chess, all the pieces are the same. It's very much the same. Chess, you need to understand all the pieces. They all have different ways that they move. And if you don't understand how each of the pieces work and their strengths and their weaknesses, you miss, you're not going to win. And I find that very similar to DISC. If you don't take the time to understand how all the people on your team are naturally wired to communicate, add value to the team and lead, you're going to be playing checkers instead of playing chess. And to get the best out of your people, you really need to take the time to understand how you're wired and your blind spots, and also that same scenario for your team. And that's where I find DISC really powerful in helping teams to take their communication and how they work together to the next level.
Normally when teams go through the DISC process with you, the evaluation process, do you find that they, after the initial process in identifying various patterns on the team, personalities, blind spots, etc., do you find that they maintain it going forward or they just went through the session and it's over?
So my goal is that I'm checking in with them a few times a month on reminders or tips. And so bringing back in, you know, why we use this and why we do it. Also leave people at the end of their first session with a kind of a printout that they can put on if they're in person, right? They can put it on their cubicle. You know, I'm Diana, I'm an IS, and this is how I like to be communicated to. And these are my strengths. And so it's there in visual. If you're virtual, you have a different way to put it in your internal team company chat. And then you're conscious of that when you're running meetings, and then also work with teams to put together a visual display of this is our team. This is how many D's, I's, S's, and C's. So you're reminded, right? When you head to a meeting and it goes on and on and on, everybody's hitting to a decision, you look at who you're meeting with, there's no D in the room. So somebody has to shift to play that role, or you're never going to get out of the meeting or accomplish anything. And just continuously working with the teams on how they apply it and how they use it and make it visible as a reminder.
You know, the more I talk to you about DISC, the more I'm reminded of AI application. It's called Humantic. I'm not sure if you know about it, but most people, when they meet the first time, they need to get to know, especially on the business side, you need to get to know the person that you're meeting with. And it gives you this particular one. Let's say we're meeting together. I used to have this subscription. I don't have it anymore. It gives me just before I meet with you, like 15 minutes, it sends me a snapshot of who you are, personality, what do you like, what you dislike. And it gives me an ability to modify my conversation to the individual that I'm going to be meeting with. Now, I know, at a leadership and, you got to sit down and do a lot more discovery. You're not going to leave it to an app somewhere to detect through social media who you are, but that helps. Mm-hmm. But on your side, from what you've seen and what you've observed, how does DISC help leader build trust across roles, cultures, pressures? I mean, there's priorities, right? So everybody's got their priorities. If I was a president, I'm responsible to I'm accountable to the shareholders. I have to deliver my numbers. Yeah, I can put all these things in place, but at the end of the day, if I don't meet my target, it's a problem.
Yeah, I mean, I think in regards to your AI example at the beginning, I think that's a great way to connect, figure out, okay, what somebody likes. But as soon as you start that conversation, you're going to find out quickly if they're really talkative. You ask them a question, oh, I see you like the Cubs or whatever baseball team. And yes, I like them, right? Well, adjust quickly because they are a direct personality. They do not want to talk about the Cubs. They want to get to the point. But if they start to tell you all the stories about the Cubs, then I need to spend some time here on interaction. That applies well within your own teams as well. Because yes, like the CEO needs to run a company and they need to be successful, but just being conscious of the team and how they are wired to communicate and how they're best to receive information is really important to adjust when you can, because then you're building trust along the way. Then when you need to deliver really good news or maybe some tough news, you have built a different connection with the people on the team. So it's easier for them to accept when you have to deliver difficult news or uncomfortable news because you've spent some time, and then you can think through how you present it so that it can apply or connect to the four different communication styles.
Now, has AI played a role in your conversation at a leadership level?
A variety of roles. I think AI is playing more of a role than we realize sometimes, honestly. But I use it more in terms of, I draft a lot of communications and may use AI to kind of check it or to see things. It doesn't mean I use it. It doesn't mean I go, oh yeah, let me just overwrite and replace everything I did with AI, but it helps to give me perspective in a different lens. But it's also helpful for different organization of tasks or different areas like that. And sometimes it's just flat out wrong. So you have to be very conscious, right? It is not your answer. It doesn't always get it right. The human element is still needed.
Still required. So do you see leadership capabilities changing? And there are probably some talents or skills that become non-negotiable in this transformative age? Do you come across that? Do you know what I mean? So let's say, a company's going on a transformation journey. They want to implement a new technology, AI specifically in this case. Does leadership capabilities become non-negotiable at this point? Or is there any leadership capabilities that become?
It's interesting. There are lots of angles to answer that question. There's multiple generations in the workforce. The younger generation is going to be much more comfortable with AI type things being brought into a work environment. The mm-hmm. older generation is going to be much more hesitant on that type of adjustment to the work environment. So leadership is absolutely needed because you're connecting across multiple generations and figuring out how we're going to leverage this. I think the other piece in AI working really well within an organization, it's counting on the data being solid. Because if the data is not solid, then that's what AI has to work with. And then you end up with a whole different problem. So leadership is absolutely needed in any use of technology because you need consistency and solid foundation in order to leverage whatever technology, AI, or automation you're working to use and bring to your AI in particular. In some companies, they may already be behind the times in technology, and then you're trying to add AI. There's some pretty big change gaps you're trying to jump all at once. So definitely leadership is needed and very necessary to help organizations navigate through the change steps.
Well, based on the conversation we've been having on this channel, the most immediate one that comes to mind, and I don't know if you agree with that, is the ethical deployment of systems. This where, you know, leadership has to take role into that. You know, there's the set of data that you talked about earlier to make AI better, but there is another set of data that we need to reflect from the human side. Yes. That not necessarily comes natural. It is not evident. It's not there in a lot of cases. So we have to build it. And most AI deployments is about cost savings. Mm-hmm. And let's be frank with each other. Most companies deploy AI for one reason, is to reduce the number of staff that they currently have and reduce the cost of a human. Human is expensive. In their opinion, AI is cheap, which I don't agree with. AI is still expensive to deploy if you're deploying it correctly.
Yes, it is.
The point that we're trying to, from a leadership perspective, is, are you deploying it ethically? Are you bringing people along? Are you repurposing the human to become involved as part of the solution versus to replace the human? Because we're seeing a lot of jobs disappear, but meanwhile, we're seeing a lot of jobs growing and prospering, and there's more demand for them. But I don't know, from your experience, it is not cut and dry to deploy technology, reduce the staff by 50%, but more deploy technology, maybe not reduce the staff by 50%, but allow the staff to do more and produce more and be more the authoritative element, if you will, in trying to garner or shape up the technology deployment and how we use these technologies. What's your comments?
I think that, I'm just having flashbacks through different parts of my career. Ignore like technology, any type of change where you're trying to become more efficient, whether it's technology related or it's just process related, people naturally fear that you're doing it because you want to eliminate roles. In the reality, if your focus is not limiting roles, making the experience better for the customer, right? Because that's why all businesses are here in the first place. Then you can have a different level of partnering with your employees. It's about the customer. And our goal isn't necessarily to save money and cut costs. It's to make the experience better for the customer. And if we're able to eliminate manual steps in an employee's process, then what else could you do with that time? How else could you add value to our customers? That's why I find those initiatives are the most beneficial and where people can rally around them when it's about the customer.
Correct.
It's not about the cost or the profits. It's about how do we make it better for our customer.
And, you know, a lot of times we had a conversation, what was it, yesterday? This morning, actually. I run a networking event Friday morning at 9 a.m. in the morning. We talk about AI exchange. People from different parts of the world, they get together and we talk about, you know, how are they using it? What challenges, what questions they have, et cetera. Sort of information sharing kind of thing. So we talked a lot today about trust. You know, trust, it comes from the various shapes and forms, right? So there's the trust between employee, employer, and there's a bigger issue with trust is client company. So, and if the customer has lost trust or degraded trust with a certain company that they're currently doing business with, it's very hard to regain.
Yes.
The trust. And how many examples we have where people dial in talking to a customer and it end up being not a human, you know, it's a bot talking to a customer, and the customer pretty much hangs up and lose faith in that company. Of course I am, and from a generation where I'm still nostalgic about the human touch, the human interface, human to human, I'm assuming the next generation would be less tolerant to that. Maybe the next generation would be like Copilot bots and a bunch of things working with them preferred to the human. But I still, you know, there's still generations to go through that.
Yes.
Where we have those generation gaps, humanity generations, where they're saying, I come from a generation where I say hello to people, shake hands with them, sit down for a coffee with them, and you're telling me I have to speak to a bot now? Are you kidding me? So there is some acceptance right now we're going through. And you're right, trust is a big deal on various levels. And when that trust is broken, in this day and age, in this generation that we're in, it's going to take a year before, you know, rebuild it back to status. And from your perspective, from a leadership perspective, that trust is very, very important. And they have to hold it. They hold the responsibility for trust for employees and trust for their customers.
Yeah. No, it's trust is broken in like a second, and it takes forever to rebuild. And that is forgotten so often.
100%.
Relationships and business.
Absolutely. Now, if leaders listening to this podcast today and they were to fix you know, if we were to recommend to them, hey, listen, fix one thing this quarter, what would that be, do you think?
Fix your communication. Look at how you can make your communication better.
Do you think they should have town halls?
Absolutely. Town hall meetings? Absolutely.
And do you think they should have it on camera or bring everybody to the office if they can? I know this distributed environment now, but if they can.
I think you strive to make it as personal as possible. If it, sometimes it means a combination where you have some in person and some in camera, and then also provide a forum for people to submit questions.
And do you think it should be about people asking questions or should be more about the company telling the people or the employees, you know, the latest and greatest in the organization?
So I personally recommend a combination of both. It's great to have a standard set of things that the company updates on, but then allow the people to have a forum either to ask questions prior or ask questions during or after, that there is a way for them to answer questions. The majority of our, you know, from a DISC profile perspective, the majority of Americans are going to be more of the S steady profile, which is, that's me. We may not have questions right away in the moment of that company meeting, but it may take us a day to think through all of our questions. So just understanding not everybody is going to be ready to rapid fire questions. Give them a forum to answer questions and provide those answers back over time. Don't expect an immediate question.
And the last thing, what do you think a leadership style would look like, a healthy one, when no one is watching?
From my perspective, we need to be who we are no matter who's watching. So be true to your values and to who you are, whether people are watching or not.
Yeah. You know, I love this conversation. And it's, to be honest with you, it's quite interesting when we talk about the human element of business and, you know, the ability to work with technology, other humans, customers, etc. So that sensory that we were built in as a human, and somebody was telling me the other day, we have like more sensors than any other machine on the planet as a human. We're a collection of sensors, I heard. God in his wisdom put that in us to allow us to do certain things and to allow us to communicate better with others, with other humans. I don't think communicating with a machine is a communication. We're just giving commands. That is phenomenal, the way you articulated it today. I want to thank you, Diana. Is there any other area that you want to cover that probably we haven't had a chance to cover?
I think from a perspective of all the different things that we've talked about, I think a key piece for a leader to think about in terms of their connection with their people and their teams is to remember, it's not about me. It's about my opportunity to connect with these people and to serve these people and my customers. And that really helps me to reset my expectations, my presence, what my goals are for the day. It's not about me. It's about the opportunity I have to serve and to lead and to connect with my people and my customers.
Absolutely. On behalf of the audience and myself, I want to thank you, Diana, for joining me today.
Thank you, Robin. It was great to be with you.
And great to see you. Great to meet you. Hopefully, that's not the last time you come into the podcast. Hopefully once in a while you drop by, and I want to wish you lots of health, lots of success. If anybody wants to get a hold of Diana Fritz and you don't know how, she is connected to me on LinkedIn. Reach out to me. I'll facilitate an introduction. Happy to do so. And if you are coming in on YouTube, thanks for watching us. If you're coming in on our podcast channel, doesn't matter which streaming platform you're using, I thank you for listening in. And just in case, if you're not a subscriber to our blog, and you would like to see a Cole's note of all of our conversations, this is where you can find a repository of all the documents that we've documented, all of our conversations with all of our guests since the beginning. Go to robinayoub.blog and subscribe, where you get a summary of this conversation and all the conversations that we've had in the past. Thank you again for listening in. Thank you again for being part of this episode. And I will see you at the next episode. Thanks, everybody.